we don't want to encourage piracy.
What they should go after is the pirates, I guess. I am a pirate. I should be arrested, jailed, or fined.
It's Sunday, April 23rd, 2006.
Almost live from the Fooking Ionosphere, it's the Pirates Week with Ragnar Danisjold.
Well, welcome back, everybody. This is Ragnar Danisjold, and you're listening to The Pirates Week, a podcast serving the shortwave pirate radio community. We take a look into the past week's pirate activity, what's going on at the Free Radio Network, an odd tech tip or two, general free radio and DXing news, the propagation forecast, throw in a little pod-safe music, and we call it The Pirates Week. Got a really good show for you this week. We're going to do the continuation with the interview with Dave Rabbit, have several good news articles, the pirate radio in the news we're going to get to, as well as some off-air recordings, some selected posts from the Free Radio Network and Al Draper's website. So let's get right into pirates in the news. First up is a little bit more information on a story we covered last week, Radio Brattleboro. Paul Reismandel, the media geek, sat down with John Anderson of DIY Media and had a little bit more discussion on what was happening with Radio Brattleboro. Let's take a listen.
And here's a story that's on the front page here of your website, DIYmedia.net, about the folks who had a free radio station in Brattleboro, Vermont.
Yes. Kind of a mixed bag of news. You want me to go into a little bit of the backstory?
Sure.
Okay, Radio Free Brattleboro was this station that operated with 10 watts in Brattleboro, Vermont, population 12,000. And basically, they ran without a license until the FCC showed up, and the FCC asked them to show their license or authority to broadcast. And so the station, which is run collectively, got together and actually debated what authority to broadcast might mean other than a license. And they came up with, hey, it means community support. It means demonstrable community support. So what they did is they collected petitions from local citizens in support of Radio Free Brattleboro. They went to the town select board, the local governing body, and got a resolution in support passed. And they also got an advisory referendum put on a ballot in like 2003, I think, or 2004, basically saying, should the citizens of Brattleboro give the station the authority to broadcast? And it passed by like a 2-1 margin. And based on this, the FCC filed a court case against them to shut them down, basically seeking an injunction against the station. And the station went to the court and said, look at all this community support we have. The FCC's not making room for stations like us to go on the air. So you should reconsider their options. And the judge actually denied the FCC what they wanted. This is exactly what happened in 1997-98 when Stephen Dunifer and Free Radio Berkeley were going through court. The FCC was going to prevail on points of law. You know, it was a station operating without a license. The Communications Act violation is pretty clear cut. However, the judge didn't like the law. And so he basically suggested that the FCC and RFB get together and try to figure out some mutually amicable solution. The FCC didn't like this, and instead of doing that, they went to another federal court in Vermont and got an arrest warrant for the station's transmitter, and in 2005 raided them while there was already a case pending in another jurisdiction, which is a complete violation of the station's due process. But, you know, besides that, finally, on March 31st, the original judge in the case that was quasi-supportive of Radio Free Brattleboro finally issued an injunction against the radio station. But he did it on terms that do not attack the core argument that Radio Free Brattleboro had made, which was you can muster local support as authority to broadcast. I haven't read the decision yet. The lawyer in their case is actually faxing it to me. But it's a 12-page decision, and apparently, as the way that people at RFB explain it, it's kind of a weasel out. you know, they lost on what was primarily a technicality. The FCC gets to keep their equipment. I was kind of hoping the judge would actually, like, hold the FCC in contempt. But the judge gets to keep their equipment. But apparently the challenge, the merits of the case that RFE was making have not been disturbed. But I still have to read the decision. So it's kind of this weird saga where, for a while, Radio Free Brattleboro was actually operating in this gray area where they didn't have a license, but the FCC was pretty much not permitted to do anything against them until the FCC, in my view, in effect, broke the law to shut them down.
And I had the several folks from Radio Free Brattleboro on the show over the last couple of years to talk about it. And they have a very vibrant community station. It is, in effect, a community radio station operated, you know, with community volunteers on the air of all stripes.
Yes. And in fact, that's why this is kind of a mixed bag, because another group in town called Vermont Earthworks actually applied for and received a construction permit for a 100-watt LPFM station. So even though the government has shut down 10-watt Radio Free Brattleboro, the unlicensed station, there will be a community radio station, Brattleboro Community Radio, WVEWLP, which is being built right now. And they're hoping to go on the air sometime this summer.
I dare say that the folks in Brattleboro will likely value the new station perhaps even a little bit more now, having sort of tasted Radio Free Brattleboro and lost it, and now realize what a precious commodity really having a community radio station in a small city like Brattleboro is.
You really have to wonder exactly. I don't know, like in a lot of cases, a lot of people do not get involved in pirate radio because they do not like the illicit nature of it. And maybe there were people in Brattleboro that shied away from doing anything with the station because it was, you know, against the grain. And whether that'll pull people out, I really hope so. I mean, you got to remember, this is population 12,000. So it's a pretty small town supporting a station like this. I think Radio Free Brattleboro, you know, obviously is transplanting a lot of its energy into this. The people that were involved in RFB and named in this court case can't be actual license holders, so they're not, like, on this new station's board of directors, but they are, from what I understand, very involved in the construction and training and, you know, organization of the station as a whole, so it's kind of a weird situation that came to a draw.
And when they first put the station together, the low-power FM license did not exist.
No, and it still doesn't exist for the kind of station they wanted. They only wanted 10 watts. And if you remember, the FCC's LPFM rules called for two classes of low-power FM licenses, 100-watt and 10-watt. And the idea was that the 10 watts would go in places where the hundreds couldn't go, like urban areas and places like Brattleboro, which are between markets and things. And even though LPFM exists, the kind of station that Radio Free Brattleboro was couldn't still have existed. So it's still, you know, kind of a half situation.
And yeah, in a lot of urban areas like Chicago or San Francisco or the metroplexes around these cities, you cannot get a low-power FM license.
Yeah,
there are
true.
No new community stations that may go on the air whatsoever. Yeah. And so it's not, you know, in Brattleboro they are lucky because they are rural and the dial is not utterly and completely full and consolidated yet. But that's the frequencies are going away and are being taken by a variety of different stations, not just low-power FM stations. The opportunity for new community stations is quickly evaporating in front of our eyes.
Yes.
That, of course, is from the Media Geeks podcast. That entire interview with John Anderson can be heard, and I suggest you go over to the Media Geek and take a look at it because the whole thing is really interesting. I'll have links of it, like everything else I'm going to talk about today, on the website. Next up, I was alerted to this next news story from Cracker's website. It was a pirate radio station operating FM in Ypsilanti, Michigan. This is from the Ann Arbor News, which is right next door to Ipsy. The plug has been pulled on Johnny Danger's Depot Town Radio. Depot Town is a part of Ypsilanti that is it's a quaint little area, a lot of shopping districts there. It's an unlicensed, Ypsy-based pirate station that could be heard on 89.5 FM. This is coming from, like I said, the Ann Arbor News. And it was shut down this last week by the FCC. This was a really nice and favorable write-up from the newspaper on the station. The station did not have any call letters. It was unlicensed and it was operating from about 8 a.m. to 8 p.m., and it was heard only in the local immediate area. Johnny Danger, who also worked for WSDS until it switched to an all-Spanish format in 2005, and he left WSDS. He said the FCC did not issue a ticket nor seize his equipment, but did direct him to stop operating his station, which he immediately complied. Well, I've done a little more digging on this story, and I do have a few quotes here you will not hear anywhere else than right here on the Pirates Week. Yep, that's what Johnny Danger said. He continues on, "We were told to cease operation. We were fully cooperative with the authorities and expect to receive only a warning. We will be popping our heads up again, only this time legally on the internet. We truly appreciate everyone's concern and support. As we learn and progress, we will let you know how things shake out." Signed, Johnny. Now, that was on a weblog that serves the Depot Town community. Well, there seems to be some more recent developments in this story that I really know you're not going to hear anywhere else but the Pirates Week. It seems the local NPR college station, WEMU, that's Eastern Michigan University, knew early on about this pirate station and kept quiet about it, not letting the authorities know. Some tentative steps have been taking place just in the last couple days to securing a time slot for Johnny Danger so he can bring his fast-paced oldies doo-wop show that he did on Depot Town Radio. In his words, it was patterned off the fast-paced boss style of CKLW. Where have we heard of that station recently? So he actually may be bringing his pirate radio station that he has been forced to close by the FCC to WEMU, the local college NPR station. Well, they're going to talk about it next week. So hopefully, Johnny Danger will be back on the air, this time a little more legally. And the last story we have for you this week is coming from the Miami Herald. Music stops for a pirate radio station, two held. State officials have shut down a pirate radio station operating out of Fort Lauderdale, Florida. For months, Creole and Caribbean music has flowed from a pirate radio station stashed behind a Fort Lauderdale music store. On Friday, the beat stopped flowing from the station, Sac Pasa Compas. I'm probably butchering that name. After agents with the Florida Department of Law Enforcement shut it down, making it the seventh pirate station it has dismantled in about a year. Junior K. Pierre of Fort Lauderdale and William Michael of Lauderhill was arrested and charged with operating an unlicensed radio station. Both are being held in the Broward County Jail Friday night. Officers seized the station's radio equipment, including a transmitter, mixing board, CDs, and microphones. So the war on free media continues in the state of Florida. And that's all we got right now for news items this week.
Now here's something we hope you'll really like.
Well, with that, you know what time it is now. It's time to take a look over at the Free Radio Network to see what's going on over at the Vines. That's www.frn.net/vines. Well, we're going to do a very select group of posts we're going to look at today, starting off with Low Power FM, LPFM, Dark Life posts in the thread What's Your Setup, a bunch of pics of his transmitter. It includes a Ramsey Electronics FM-10A modified and built into a chassis with an RF amp. With a 30-foot tower, he reports a 3-mile signal with 800 milliwatts. Bouncer posts a link to an FM transmitter dealer, www.broadcast-store.co.uk. That's the broadcast store out of England. And in the 11 Meters forum, Dogma142 posts questioning a hex beam antenna. Well, like JTA replies, I have never heard of such a thing. But it does remind me of the neighbor's clothesline from when I was a kid, though. Looks like you could hang probably a whole load of laundry on that sucker. And leaving the FRM and taking a look at the DX Programs forum, that's at http://piratedxer.com. Dave Rabbit posts that Radio First Termer is coming to a war near you. He is coming to the aid of the soldiers in Iraq. Shortly after it is released, it will be distributed to the pirate radio community. As a side note to that, I heard some advanced clips of this show was already on the shortwave pirate bands, so if that's any indication, the full show should be spectacular. And a little bit later, coming up in this show, we're going to have the continuation of the interview with Dave Rabbit from Radio First Termer. And from the electronic newsletter, the Free Radio Weekly, is the recent shortwave pirate radio stations that have been heard. This is from the FRW, dated today, 4-23-06. Pirates include Captain Morgan, Ludafisk Radio, Pirate Radio Boston, Radio First Termer, Radio Free Euphoria, Radio Pygmy International, Take It Easy Radio, The Crystal Ship, The Voice of Captain Ron Shortwave, Voice of Runaway Maharishi, WBNY, and WHYP. No QSLs were reported being received this week.
I heard you coming on a pirate transmission, coming in through my head, station to station. You're coming in waves, stuttered and broken, and talking about revolution.
Hey everybody, I'm the Pirate DXer. Well, I hope you had a chance to get on the bands and give a listen to some Shortwave Pirates this week. Myself, I've been pretty busy working 12-hour days, and I didn't get much of a chance until Saturday evening, early Sunday morning. I got onto the bands and I gave a listen. And first of all, I heard Take It Easy Radio coming in with a wicked signal there. So this was April 23rd. Actually, all the recordings tonight are from April 23rd, 6925. This was 0030 UTC.
Hey, you're listening to Take It Easy Radio, Power Shortwave, hanging out on the bands. Good evening or good morning, wherever you may be at. Looks like it's treating you cool and nice, and everyone got big smiley faces on. hope things are going to your liking, man.
Okay, next I heard WBNY on 6925 at 0045 UTC with Commander Bunny and the Pirate Feud. And my final recording was Take It Easy Radio. It came back on the air with a nice signal at 0130 UTC on 6925 in the upper mode.
That song there was After the Thrill Is Gone by the Eagles off their One of These Nights album. It was one of the songs that never got a lot of airtime, man, but to me, one of the cooler songs. And man, back in my day, back then, woo, black light posters and smoked a lot of weed. And a lot of beer and liquor, too, so not much, but I guess more beer and liquor. But
well, that's all I have for you this week. Hopefully next week I'll have a few more recordings, and hopefully the conditions will be good and we'll get some more pirates. For the Pirates Week, this is the Pirate DXer, and I'll say 73, and we'll see you next week. Bye-bye, everybody.
The Pirates Week Podcast, your home for shortwave pirate information. PiratesWeek.info. That's PiratesWeek.info.
Still have a radio. Anyone here at all? Anyone here at all?
Well, it looks like we're going to go a little long this week, so let's bump a couple of these stories I had until next week. We'll skip the website of the week. Let's go right into the propagation forecast from This Week in Amateur Radio, and then do the remainder of the interview I had with Dave Rabbit from Radio First Termer. And let's see if we can hold this sucker to under 40 minutes. So without further ado, This Week in Amateur Radio's propagation forecast.
Taking a look at this week's propagation forecast, geomagnetic activity was higher over the past week, with the average daily planetary A index rising over 6 points to 18. The most active days were Friday and Saturday, April 14th and 15th, when the planetary A index was 58 and 29. All this and auroras, too, were caused by a stiff solar wind meeting an interplanetary magnetic field pointing south, which made the Earth very vulnerable. Otherwise, geomagnetic activity has been low and should stay that way. Sunspot numbers and solar flux should rise gradually, reaching a peak around April 29th through May 3rd. The predicted planetary A index for April 21st through 25th is 8, 8, 10, 8, and 8. Geophysical Institute Prague predicts quiet to unsettled conditions for April 21st, unsettled conditions April 22nd through the 23rd, and quiet to unsettled April 24th and 25th, with quiet conditions happening on April 26th and 27th.
Okay, we're going to resume again our interview we had with Dave Rabbit of Radio First Termer, where we left off last week. He just got done relaying his experiences he had in the Vietnam War with putting out Radio First Termer on the Big 69. He now has revived Radio First Termer, and he's got a lot of good things going on. Let's continue our conversation with Dave and see what he's got up his sleeve for the future. Okay, let's fast forward 30 years now. Well, when did you realize people still remembered the Radio First Termer broadcasts?
Well, you know, the very first time that I actually even knew that someone had recorded the show was in 1982. I am at a party and talking to some people, and I meet this guy, and we start talking, and he says, well, hey, did you ever serve in the military? I said, yeah. I said, how about you? He said, yeah, I was in the Army, stationed at Wiesbaden, Germany. And I said, really? I said, okay. I said, well, I was in Vietnam. And he goes, hey, did you ever hear of Dave Rabbit? And I said, how do you know about Dave Rabbit? And he said, oh, man, he's popular as hell over in Germany. And I'm going, how could he be popular in Germany? I said, you know, his show, you know, didn't exist after 71. He said, oh, man, he says, somebody recorded one of his shows, and they're making copies, and everybody's making copies. And, I mean, it's just hundreds and hundreds of copies, you know, they're flowing everywhere. So, you know, of course, I was just shocked. And I said, well, I said, I'm Dave Rabbit. He goes, yeah, sure you are. You know, I'm Adolf Hitler. I said, no, seriously, I'm Dave Rabbit. He said, well, you know, do one of your stuff. And so I, you know, kind of went into Krabs Can Pole Vault, you know, and did some little shtick for him. He goes, damn, you are Dave Rabbit. He said, man, you really made my day. I said, no, brother, you've made mine. And then he made me a copy of the tape. Now, in answer to your question, February 9th, 2006, my kid is a senior in high school right now. My last kid, thank God. And he's doing a report, a history report, and I told him, I said, well, you know, I since I did my tours in Vietnam, I said, you know, maybe I can find you some stuff on Vietnam that'll, you know, help you with the report. And I'm on the internet, February 9th, 2006, and I'm clicking through some Vietnam sites, and I come across a site that has audio clips, and I go down, and there's a couple of clips there. It says Radio First Termer, and I'm going, what, you know, what is this? I click on, and sure enough, it goes to the homepage of Radio First Termer that Will Snyder created, and I see all these MP3 click-ons to where you can download the entire show, and all these little theoretical what happened to Dave Rabbit scenarios, and that's really 35 years later from the time that the show existed that I found out that there's a parallel life of me going on without my knowledge. It really blew me away.
Yeah, that had to be really, had to really blow your mind. Now, you have some material coming out in the movie Sir No Sir, right? How did that happen?
Well, one of the sites that was there, I mean, there was a bunch of them, like Vietnam Veterans Association, and there's one site called Above Top Secret, where it's nothing but conspiracy theories and X-Files and black helicopters. It's really an amazing site. And there was like a they were saying on that one that that I was a conspiracy of the government, that the government created Dave Rabbit. And so one of the sites that I came across was Sir No Sir. And it's amazing. You know, I click on to it, and, you know, here's a whole page of nothing but audio clips from the show. And then I come to find out that the reason why they had me on there is that they've used two or three clips from the show, the only show that is in existence that was recorded, on their movie. And then from there, I start contacting David Zeiger, who is the producer, director of Sir No Sir. It's kind of his project. He and I talk, and we have developed just an amazing friendship and relationship. And that's when he said, you know, well, you know, we're only using some of your clips for the show. And then other than that, he wants, when the DVD is released to the public, he wants to have like a special features section. And in the special features section, I have produced a music bio video DVD that he's going to put in the special features. And then we're also probably going to do like a physical interview that'll just be part of that special features package, which will help sell his DVDs to the public. Pretty much it.
Do you know when that DVD is coming out to the market?
Well, the movie is not even coming out till May. If it runs from May to June, I'd say probably July to August, the DVD will be available.
Oh, that's cool. Now, I hear there's also a possibility of a documentary coming out, too.
Yeah, we're working with a company right now called Chance Films. And it's owned and co-founded by Leslie Neal, who's this real famous producer-director of over 20 years, and her husband, who's is John Densmore. And John Densmore is the one of the original founders of the band The Doors. So it's kind of a really neat possible marriage. It's not in concrete yet, but it's like 99% concrete that we're going to give them like an 18-month option to where they can go out and see and kind of sell Dave Rabbit and Radio First Turbo and kind of see where we go. Our ideas are anywhere from a documentary, which would involve going back to Vietnam and retracing the steps, the three tours that I did to get to Radio First Turbo, also doing like a movie. That's one of the options that we've discussed. Another option that we've discussed is like a TV series, like a Band of Brothers on HBO, something along that line.
That sounds really nice.
HBO would be well, you know, with all the language in the station and stuff. I mean, there's no way we could do it on like NBC or ABC. So we'd have to have something that would be like HBO where we could make it authentic language.
Right. Well, what else is really neat is I'm sure on the Big 69 you were playing The Doors, so a bit of a full circle there with The Doors connection.
Yeah, and what's really funny is, in fact, one of the things that we were discussing when we were talking about in the preliminary stages, you know, I told him, I said, you know, that we had done Doors music. One of the things that the show that was recorded, there's one song from Iron Butterfly, and we originally did the long version of Inagata La Vida on one of the shows, but I mean that thing lasted, you know, what, 22 minutes or whatever.
That's
it was.
Yeah, that's the bathroom break.
That was half our show.
That's the bathroom break album. You can just put it on and then head down the hall.
Oh yeah, I mean, you know, you can clean your entire house by the time that song's through. The neat thing about the possible marriage with Chance Films is because of John and his relationship, and being founding of The Doors, he knows so many rockers from that era. And as you well know, there's a lot of legal copyright and whatever that's involved in a legalized version to do anything. And having him, if it happens, having him be part of that family is going to make it so much easier, because the rock music is a lot of the story also. I mean, Radio First Turner is the story. You know, I just happen to be the host, but the music is part of the story. I mean, it's a major part of the story. You take out the rock music of Radio First Turner and you don't have Radio First Turner. So it's extremely critical, extremely critical.
If I understand it, I mean, that was all part of the counterculture, was the rock music, and the AFN was not going to have that on any of their stations. So you were the only outlet.
No, they didn't have rock music. They were like a top 40 bubble, what I call bubblegum music. You would never hear blood rock. You would never hear Iron Butterfly. You know, you would never hear The Doors. You would never hear groups that really, Steppenwolf was not even a question that you wouldn't hear him, you know. Now, one thing you have to understand is the show, the catalyst for the show was not for Air Force guys, even though I was an Air Force guy, because we're sitting on Air Force bases, and although, you know, our lives were at risk also, the show was intended for the guys in the field, Army and Marines, those two guys. You know, the Navy guys, they're on ships out in the middle of the ocean. The Army and the Marine guys, the guys that were day-to-day putting their lives on the line, those guys only, was what Radio First Timer was about. And the whole catalyst, the whole reason why we wanted to do the show is for those guys to go, hey, man, right on, you know, and give them a laugh, a smile, you know, because their next minute that they may have may be in confrontation and they may end up going home in a body bag. And those guys are the ones we did the show for.
Well, if they're still talking about it 30 years later, you definitely made an impact. That's for sure. I was reading the articles in About.com that you did with Corey Dietz. I think there's three or four that he posted. Have you done any other articles that people can access? Any other interviews?
You know, we've got some radio interviews other than this one. Which, by the way, I want to take this opportunity, Ragnar, to tell you that, you know, I am a real fan, and I just really want to tip my hat not only to you but to all the pirate radio people all over the world that are doing it, because it's just amazing. And I mean, it's just a thumbs up, a four rabbits up, you know, salute to each of you guys for what you've done. Now, you asked me about other interviews. And what I meant to tell you before I got sidebarred was that we're going to do something for public radio that's going to be on the national public radio frequencies or whatever coming up probably May or June, and that's going to be kind of neat. It's going to be like they're going some kind of documentary kind of thing about people in history or whatever. Not that I'm anything historical at all, but I guess there was enough interest that they wanted to do an interview with me. So that's coming up. I'm doing another interview that's going to be with the Clear Channel Network, which is a company that owns like 147 rock stations throughout the world. And I'm going to be doing an interview with them probably in the next couple of weeks. But other than that, you know, we're just kind of doing the movie thing and kind of doing stuff on the website and you know, going to do some things hopefully with you down the way where we do a special program for Pirate Radio and just got a lot of things going on. Open to any ideas, though, if you got them.
Well, I assure you, if you put some new material out there that somebody, not me, but somebody will put it out over the pirate radio airwaves, that's for sure. You mentioned your website, or actually, what is that, Will Snyder's website. Do you know the address of that?
Yeah, it's real easy. We acquired the Vietnam websites. It's just radiofirstterminer.com.vn, which VN stands for Vietnam. So radiofirstterminer.com.vn. And that puts you to our homepage, and then on the homepage we have you know, a lot of connections, including to your site. It has the Sir No Sir shortcut on it, and above Top Secret, and Corey Dietz, and just some interesting places to go.
Really, thank you for coming on the Pirates Week and coming on the broadcast and kind of reminiscing over what you've been doing back in the Vietnam days, and I really appreciate it.
Well, you're very welcome, and, you know, I really appreciate the opportunity, Ragnar, to talk to you personally and to all the Pirate Radio fans and the Pirate Radio owners and the Pirate Radio DJs. Wish you the very best and continued on, and hope to meet each and every one of you somewhere down the way.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, everybody. Hey, thanks for tuning in. We're going to call that a show. Hey, I just wanted to throw out the website one last time out there for Radio First Termer. That was www.radiofirsttermer.com.vn. Had a lot of good stuff on there, a lot of pics, a lot of audio to peruse. Also want to thank This Week in Amateur Radio, the Pirate DXer, the PodSafe Music Network, and anybody else I have forgotten. And I'm going to leave you with a little classic Dave Rabbit. So Until next time, gang. Hey, thanks for listening.
This motherfucker is so goddamn long. I could have gone downstairs and got a shot of back.
I've got all the freedom, honey. Don't you know that I'm loving you? And I've got all the freedom, baby. Don't you know that I've always been true?
From the Boat Anchor Soft Glow to your MP3 player, via the World Wide Web, we meld the oldest and the newest audio technology. Welcome to the Pirates Week, piratesweek.tripod.com.
You are without doubt the worst pirate I've ever heard of.
But you have heard of me.